All right. Greetings. Again, my apologies, technical difficulties, but here we are. And I had to pick something that's actually permissible because for Dovi, certainly, it's already Tisha B'Av, but the rest of us, it's already after Chatzot, it's after midday. Matter of fact, if you want, I could even say that the reason the technical difficulties were there were to make sure it was absolutely after midday so that this problem would really be something we would have to deal with. But that's a little bit of a smokescreen. Anyhow, all right. The topic I want to deal with is one that really cuts to the core of a fast day. And it's a little bit, it may seem a little bit out of tune with the day before the fast day. It's really something perhaps to meditate upon tomorrow afternoon. But I think it's also something to use to prepare coming into a fast day and the whole issue of mourning Yerushalayim. And so we're going to study two chapters of the prophet of Zechariah. I want to give a quick introduction to the book of Zechariah, and then we'll go from there. By the way, certainly understandable if based on schedule, if people need to leave early, the recording will be posted up, and just send me an email if you want a copy of it. The book of Zechariah, which is part of Treyasar, vies with Hosea as being the longest book in chapters, 14 chapters. But the book of Zechariah is really two very different books. There is the first eight chapters, which we're going to be looking at, not all of them, the chapters 7 and 8, and there's chapters 9 through 14. 9 through 14 seem to be a very different time period, a very different focus. A lot of scholars and some Mefarshim, will argue that the second half of Zechariah, from Tet to Yudalid, is really the words of an earlier prophet whose prophecies had certain things in common with the Zechariah, so his prophecies were put there. So the end of days prophecies are put there. But be that as it may, it's clearly a very different book. From Perek Tet on is all eschatology. It's all of end of days. Some of the psukim we know about Mashiach are in there. The psukim about the whole world coming to celebrate Sukkot in Yerushalayim, all in the second half of Zechariah, second part. The first part of Zechariah is very dated. It's very clear. We're told that Zechariah ben Ido ben Berechia was a prophet in Jerusalem in the era just before the rebuilding and during the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. And Zechariah, essentially, that part is also made up of two parts. There is the first six chapters, which we've actually looked at in the past part of, because the first six chapters are a series of seven visions that Zechariah has in one night on the 24th of Shvat of the second year of Dayavish, which puts it around the year 518 BCE. And these visions all focus around Yerushalayim. The middle of those visions, the number four out of the seven, is the menorah. We read about in the Haftarah of Chanukah and of Alotcha. And indeed, we might remember a few years ago, we looked at it, and the entire structure of those seven kind of creates a literary menorah. And we're going to look, however, at the next two chapters, right? So I'm going to preface it by asking a question, which is a very timely question. It's the kind of question that we ask right around now. We ask it other times of the year. But if you were to ask somebody, why was the Beit HaMikdash destroyed? Why was Yerushalayim destroyed? Why does Tisha B'Av that we are starting, and some of us have already started, why does it exist at all? So what's the answer to that? I opened up the unmuted. What was the answer to that? Why is there Tisha B'Av? Why was there destruction?
We sinned.
Okay, good. So if you ask a theologian like Sam why Yerushalayim was destroyed, he'll say because we sinned. If you ask a historian of the classical period, what will he tell you?
Other people were stronger than we were.
Yeah, you pick a fight with the Romans. What do you expect? It's not going to come out well, especially when your own people are divided against each other. And there's all sorts of factions, both religious factions, but also political factions, and with very different strategies and with extreme positions on how to deal with that and how to carry out the strategies. So what's the answer? The answer is both. The answer is that the picking a fight with the Romans was pretty much suicidal under those circumstances, and that we sinned. So what's the reality? The reality is both. But I'd like to suggest an idea here that we've talked about in the past, which is that Jewish history is not a still life picture. It's a dynamic picture. And I want you, you will use an onion as an example. You look at an onion and it's brown, let's say, and you see from the outside, you peel it away and it gets lighter and you get more to the sweetness of it on the inside. Jewish history is like that. You look at an event in Jewish history, whether it be the establishment of the State of Israel, the Six-Day War, the current election problems, whatever we have, and you see an event which historians, their job, the job of historians, to identify cause and effect. What was it that put things in motion to allow to the Jewish people to reestablish them as themselves as a state in 1948? So you look at the Shoah and you look at World War I and you look at other national liberation movements that happened in the late 19th century in Europe. Look at all that, put it together, and okay, that's why it happened. The job of the historian is to identify causality. The job of the theologian is to look deeper, to peel away, and see underneath that what's really happening. And this is something that Professor Uriel Simon dubbed Sibatiyut Kfula, what we call double causation. And it's something, by the way, that happens throughout Tanakh. I'll give you one quick example of something we all know. Why did we end up in Egypt as slaves? So the simplest explanation is because God said that's part of what you're going to have to go through before you get the land. Brit Ben Amatarim. And yet, if you were to read the story straight up, and let's say, look as close to Shemot as possible, the end of Bereishit is very simple. The brothers sold Yosef into slavery. Yosef became a powerful man in Egypt. And so they moved down there. And because everybody else in Egypt was slaves except for Yosef's family, when Yosef and his brothers all died, the worm turned and they enslaved them. All right. Both are true. And Chazal, by the way, teased with both of them. But ultimately, when you cut underneath and inside, you've got to find the theological reason. Such is exactly what happens here. So when you ask, why was there a Churban? This is what Zechariah is coming to answer. We're going to share the sheet now, and we'll see how this plays out. And you'll notice that in the Hebrew title of the source sheet, I put that this is Ha'efkeh b'chodesh ha'chamishi. Shall I continue to mourn during the fifth month? We'll see where that comes from. She'ela u'pitrona, so question and its answer. But a surprise that's buried in the words of the Navi. And I believe that the message that we get here is very timely, very critical. All right. Again, this is chapter 7 and 8. We're going to look at the whole chapter, although we'll go through parts of it very quickly. So this is now 2 years after Zechariah had those visions. And this is now, while the second Mikdash has been rebuilt or is in process of rebuilding, which raises a very clear halachic question. So it's the fourth of Kislev in that year. Now Beit El actually is probably somebody's name, like Bituel. Sar Etzer v'Regem Melech Lanashav. So these three people come from Bavel, l'chalot et pnei Adonai, to seek out God. Now, I know they didn't come to Beit El, they came to Zechariah. Zechariah's in Yerushalayim. Leimor, el ha-Kohanim, asher levet Adonai Tzvaot. So they came to ask the Kohanim, vel ha-Nevi'im, and to ask the Nevi'im. So Zechariah is the address. And what's the question they want to ask? It's a very simple question. Ha-Evkeh b'chodesh ha-Chamishi. Should I mourn, or shall I continue to mourn in the fifth month? After all, we've been mourning, we'll see how long, for a while because of the destruction. And now it's being rebuilt. Should we stop mourning? Should Tisha B'Av go out the window? We'll call it Tisha B'Av, although we don't know that yet. Hinazer kasher asiti zeh kamesh shanim. Should I abstain? Which means they had some customs of mourning, of abstaining from perhaps weddings or from festivities or whatever it is during the entire month of Av. Should I continue doing that as I've done for many years or number of years? Now, this is, by the way, a binary question. It's very simple. It's mutter or it's husser. Continue or don't continue. And that's what the next thing should be. Vahi dvar Hashem Zechariah, emor lahem ken, or emor lahem lo. Either tell them continue or don't continue. It should be very simple. So you wonder why there is another chapter and a half of answer. Let's see. Ayin Rav Adonai Tzvot Delai Lemor. So Zechariah says, God spoke to me, saying the following. Emoro kol am ha'aretz ve'la kohanim lemor. So tell them, and tell the kohanim, who, by the way, were the ones to whom the question was posed, tell them. Kitzamtem v'safod b'chamishi uvashvi'i. Now we find suddenly here that they're also fasting in the seventh month, and this is not Yom Kippur. This is Tzom Gedalia, we would assume. V'zeshivim shana atzom tzamtuniani. For 70 years you've been fasting. Is this my fast? Kitochlu v'chitishtu, alo atem ha'ochlim, atem ha'shotim. You eat and drink, that's you eating and drinking. You fast, that's you fasting. Which means God seems to be saying, that's not something I ever asked you to do. Okay, so then the answer should be, it's up to you. But the answer is not that. And then he says the following. Dvarim asher kara Adonai biyad ha-nevim harishonim. Now he's talking to Zechariah, who now is Navi Acharon, a last Navi. They don't know that it's the end, but it's near the end of prophecy. But Navim Rishonim means earlier. The words that I spoke through the earlier Navim, Biyot Yerushalayim Yoshevet Ushleva, Yerushalayim was comfortable and sitting securely. The Areha Svotah, and all the villages around it that were connected. Vanegev Ashvela Yoshev, the Negev, the plain near the sea, was all comfortable, right? And what did I tell the Nevi'im? Vayidra Adonai Zechariah Lemor, Kom Adonai Tzvot Lemor. There we go. Mishpat Emet Shifotu. You have to judge proper judgment. V'chesed v'rachamim asu et ish rachiv. And also act with compassion and kindness towards each other. V'almana v'yatom ger v'ani al tashoku. Do not oppress the underprivileged, the widow, the orphan, the stranger, and the poor. Don't think about the evil of somebody else, which means don't conspire, don't plan to try to hurt somebody. That's the message. Now, that was the message I gave the earlier prophets, which we will assume he's referring to Yirmiyahu. What did the people do? They refused to listen. And they put a stubborn shoulder against it. They made their ears too heavy to listen. V'libam samu shamir. They made their heart like a metal. Mishmoa et ha-Torah et ha-Dvarim asher shalach Adonai Tzvot b'ruchu v'yad ha-Nevim rishonim. They refused to listen. They made themselves stubborn, stuffed up their ears. What happened? Vayit ketzav gadol meit Adonai Tzvot. And God got very angry. And now what happened? Vayi chasher kara v'lo shameu. God called out through the Navi, and they didn't listen. Similarly, they will call out and I won't listen. Now remember the Midrash that we saw a couple weeks ago about Kamsa Bar Kamsa. That the Midrash, Midrash Echa, says, Gedolei Yisrael would turn away when they would see a sin happening. So God said, I'll do the same to them. When they're in trouble, I'll turn away too. But here you see it explicit in the Pasuk. So what happened? I sent them out like a storm among all the nations they didn't know. In other words, exile. The land was desolate when they left. Nobody came through. And the beautiful land became desolate and dry. Now, God here is saying the following. They're asking, should we continue fasting? And God's not answering the question. God's saying, here's what you have to do. You have to judge properly and treat people properly. That's exactly what I told the Nevi'im before, and the people didn't listen, and look what happened. Now, let's hear how this develops. So God said, Ko amar Adonai Tzvot, kineti l'tzion kina gdola. I am very jealous on behalf of Tzion. V'chema gdola kineti la. I have a great anger on its behalf, which means, God, and this is something we saw earlier in Zechariah also, that God punished the Jewish people, but he also saw that the nations who were used to punish them went too far. I'm coming back. Look at me. We're rebuilding. I brought you back and we're rebuilding. My presence is now in Yerushalayim. Nikra Yerushalayim Ir Ha'emet. What will Yerushalayim be called? Ir Ha'emet, the city of truth. And the mountain will be called the Holy Mountain. Now, where is this coming from? So I want to take you back. If I were to ask you what's the very first mention of Yerushalayim in any form in Tanakh, you would right away answer, we all know it, from Avraham's interaction with the king of Shalem. The king of Shalem, which we understand really from Sanherib's prism, is an earlier name for Urushalayim or Yerushalayim. And the king has a name, which is a title name. It's not a personal name. His name is Malki Tzedek. The first time that we actually meet Yerushalayim with its name, in the beginning of the 10th chapter of Yoshua, its king's name is Adoni Tzedek, which means there was some ancient tradition that the Jebusites held there that it's a city of Tzedek, a city of justice. What did we hear this past Shabbat in the Haftarah of Chazon? Echa heita lezona kirya ne'emana. How could this city become so unfaithful? The trustworthy city become unfaithful. Tzedek yalin ba v'ratam miratzchim. It's a city that was supposed to have tzedek, and now it's filled with murderers. And what's the promise at the end of that prophecy of return? Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh v'shaveh b'tztakah. And acharei chen yikarei lach ir ha-tzedek. The city will be called the city of tzedek. So in other words, he's saying, this city will be called Ir HaEmet, the city of truth, the city of Tzedek, the city of Chesed. That's what will happen when I return you. But of course, that's not up to me, that's up to you. And then we hear this beautiful image of what it's going to look like. Now, I have to introduce these next two psukim with a story. It's a great story, and it's very appropriate for Tisha B'Av's story. I have a teacher, who should live long and be well, made Aliyah in, I think, 1969, and he taught literally thousands of students at the American yeshivot and michlalot that have been around. I was never formally his student, but I visited friends where he was teaching, and I sat in the class. We developed a very nice relationship. I was a guest at his home many, many Shabbatot. And he had a custom in the 1970s, so take us all back, where he would ask the students, because they were all Americans, and many of them went back to the States for Pesach, the Ridel Regel. And he would ask them when they went home to bring back jump ropes and Super Bowls. You guys remember Super Bowl? They bounce it, go very high. And the first day back after Pesach, he'd come with a huge bag and have all the students come and fill his bag with the Super Bowls and jump ropes that they brought back. And then he would go to the Katamonim. The Katamonim is an area of Yerushalayim, which at least in those days was considered, shall we say, lower income. Make it nice. And he would stand on the streets and hand out these toys to the little children. And he'd watch little children jumping rope in the streets of Jerusalem and bouncing Super Bowls. And he would stand by and he would cry. And he would say, my grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, Rabbi Kiva Eger, the Vilna Gaon, the Bach, the Beit Yosef, the Rambam, none of them got to see the fulfillment of this prophecy, and I get to see it. And what's the prophecy? Komar Adonai Tzvaot, Od Yeshvu Zekenim Uzekenot, Rechovot Yerushalayim. The day will come when old people will be in the streets of Yerushalayim, meaning people will live to an old age. The ish mishanto v'yado mirov yamim, and everyone will have a walking stick because they'll be so old. Now we look at that as a curse. We're saying to be old enough to need a walking stick means you lived long yoren. Urchovot ha'ir yimalu yiladim v'yiladot misachakim b'chovotah, and the streets will be filled with boys and girls playing in the streets. Imagine, that's the nevuah, the end of days, normal life in Yerushalayim. Now to us that sounds not a big deal. But look at the next pasuk. This vision is wondrous in the eyes of everybody. They think it's crazy. And by the way, for 2,700 years, it was crazy. But is it wondrous for me? I can make anything happen. Reminds us of the Malach's reaction after Sarah laughed. Right? Is there anything beyond God? And now here we go. I'm going to redeem my people from the east and from the west. I'll bring them and they'll live in Yerushalayim. Notice he keeps throwing that in. They will be my people. I will be their God. be'emet uvitztaka. And then he comes in the next paragraph, which I left uncolored, and we're going to go through, talks about great prosperity that's going to happen to them. And now look at Pasuk Yodalad. Kicho amar Adonai Tzvot, kasher zamamti v'hara lachem, v'aksif avotechem oti. Just like I conspired, it's something we read, Dovi, read, the rest of us, are about to read in Eicha, Asa Adonai asher zamam. God did that which he conspired to do. And so here he says, Kasher zamamti lahara lachem, I conspired to do evil to you, haktsif avotechem oti, when your ancestors angered me. How'd they anger me? They didn't listen to the Nevi'im. What were they doing? Injustice, judicial abuse, hurting the disenfranchised, oppression. Amar adonai tzvot v'lo nichamti, right? I didn't change my mind. Kain shavti zamamti b'mayla. Now, similarly, I am conspiring now. Lehetiv et Yerushalayim et Beit Yehuda al tirau. Now I'm going to be beneficent with you. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to do good for Yerushalayim and Yehuda. Don't be afraid. Things are going to get better. So what was the original question? Should we keep fasting on Tisha B'Av? What was the answer? Things are getting better. Listen to what the Nevi'im said back then. What's going on? And then he says, Eila Dvarim Asher Tasu. This is what you have to do. Dabru im emet ish et reyu. Speak truthfully to each other. Emet u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sha'arichem. Judge truthfully and with mishpat shalom. Talk about that in a minute. V'ish et ra'at reyu al tachshu avchem. Again, this theme. Don't conspire and plan against each other. U'shvuot sheker al ta'avu. Don't be connected to. Don't love, as it were, to lie falsely, to lie under oath. These are things I hate. And then he says, at the end of all of this, what was the question? Should we continue fasting? His answer now is, and remember what he said. He said, fast, don't fast, eat, don't eat. That's not the point. And now he says, here we go. By the way, this is the only place that we hear about a fast in the month of Tammuz, or the fast in the month of Tevet. We hear about the news about the beginning of the siege in Yechezkel, but about the fact that they fasted in those days, and we have these four fasts. These will be joyous days. Tisha B'Av will be a Yom Tov, will be a celebratory day, and so will the other three fasts, the Yomim Tovim. What's the condition? V'amet v'shalom mehavu. So in other words, they ask the question, should we continue fasting? And God's essential answer is, you're not asking the right question. You're asking about an effect. You need to ask about a cause. You're saying, we used to fast because of destruction. Now we're rebuilding, so do we still, because it's not as great, do we still fast? Or do we say, no, we're rebuilding, so we don't fast? God says, that's not the question. Fast, don't fast, not the issue. The issue is, did you pay attention to what caused the destruction? And are you willing now to listen and to correct it? That's the real question. And now we get to what the ultimate goal is. So before that, I want to tell you another story, because Tisha B'Av is a time for stories, and this parak of Zechariah, as you can see, is a time for stories. This week, I suggested to a few friends that we have Avelut Kfula, a double mourning. Truth is, it's a triple mourning, but two of them are tied together. We've all been in a state of Avelut of sorts for the last 5 months. The members, Avilut is about social distance, not talking to people, it's about sitting quietly, sitting in your home. So in a sense, we've been under a cloud of Avilut of sorts. Second of all, as you all know, normally I'm in Israel for Tisha B'Av, and I'm in Israel before Tisha B'Av for the beautiful Yimei Iyun, where 8,000 people come and study Torah together, study Tanakh together, and I usually give one lecture and then attend 24 others, and it's just a magnificent time. This year, of course, the Yimei Yun were all on Zoom. I hope some of you caught them. And we're able to follow the shiurim, some of them fantastic shiurim. There's even some that are being given tomorrow. And so all the things that I normally do on Tisha B'Av, of going up to Herodion to read Eicha at night, and to go to the Kotel for keynote in the morning, and to go give a shiur in Ranan in the afternoon, all those things are on hold this year. Plus, there's Tisha B'Av. But the Yemei Iyun, the Tanakh seminar that we have in the summer, is a fantastic experience. By the way, by 5:30 at the end of the day, I I'm squeezed out. I'm just totally a wreck after sitting for approximately 8 straight hours listening to great lectures, amazing lectures. But, you know, you're squeezed out. But one of the highlights of the day, believe it or not, is lunch. Now, the lunch, it's 9-day food. It's yeshiva food. It's nothing to write home about. But lunch is basically in two shifts. And depending which shift you get and when you get in line and who you find and who has a seat at the table, you could end up sitting with some amazing people. The truth is, I've sat with people I had to know were amazing and got to know them. So a few years ago, I happened to be going to lunch with my friend, Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, and we sat down with Rabbi Yoel Ben-Nun and several of the other master teachers there. And I think you all know that I'm not shy. So I turned to Rabbi Yoel and asked him, Rabbi Yoel, Atam Amshich Latzum B'Tisha B'Av, do you continue to fast and mourn on Tisha B'Av? He said, Beta, of course. He said, Lama? I also fast and continue to mourn on Tisha B'Av. But I wanted to see what he had to say. After all, God has given us everything. God has given us a return. God has given us a vibrant economy. God has given us an amazing army that can protect us. What are we missing? Beit HaMikdash? So let's build it. I was speaking as part of trying to provoke a response. So he told me an amazing story. He said a few years ago, so this now goes back a few plus a few. He was on a television show in Israel. It's a popular personality in Israel. And he was interviewed and they asked him that exact question. Why do you fast on Tisha B'Av? And he pointed to Zechariah. And he said, because until we fix what's wrong here, we have to keep fasting. We're not fasting because of what we don't have that was destroyed a long time ago. We're fasting because of what we haven't fixed. As long as there is a population in Israel living below the poverty line, as long as there are people who are being hurt, as long as people who are in trouble and we're not taking care of them, then that means we haven't fixed this. So the end of the story is, he then turned and said, a few months later, he was walking down the street. Some woman came up to him out of nowhere and says, Ata, Yoel Ben-Nun? Are you Rabbi Ben-Nun? He said, yeah. She said, you know, I'm a totally secular woman. The woman said, I don't keep Shabbat. But I watched that show, and ever since then, I guess it was a year later, I fast on Tisha B'Av. She got the point. They were fasting not for perhaps something about the past, and Chazal say it in a different way. Any generation that does not build the Beit HaMikdash, it's as if they destroyed it. What they mean by that is that we have the responsibility to try to go to the cause of the destruction and fix it. And then the fast becomes not the question, like we see in Zechariah. And so now we come to the punchline, the end of this. Because ultimately, what's our purpose? Why is it that we want a Beit HaMikdash rebuilt? What is it that we want? So we hear this. It's something we know from Chumash, something we know from Yeshayahu, from Micha, from other Nevi'im. We hear it here beautifully. People from lots of other nations are going to come. The people of one city are going to come to another and they're going to say, let's go seek out the face of Hashem, the God of Israel. And we'll go seek Hashem Tzvaot. Gam ani. And I'll go also. Uvau amim rabim v'goyim atzumim. Many nations and powerful nations will come l'vakesh et Adonai Tzvaot b'Yerushalayim. They'll come to seek out God. U'lachalot et pnei Adonai. And to pray to God. Why are these nations going to come to Yerushalayim? Why aren't they going to London? Why aren't they going to Washington? They're coming to Yerushalayim because Yerushalayim is a place where God resides. And how do they see that God resides there? Because it's an Ir HaEmet. It's a city of truth, a city of justice. It is a country, a state that takes care of its citizens and all of its citizens in a just and compassionate manner. By the way, we are getting there, but there's still a way to go. And then he ends the following. I'm going to tell you a story at the end to close this off. Komar Adonai Tzvaot, Bayamim HaHema, so one way of reading this, the way the Gemara reads it, is the 10 people from every nation, I mean 10 people from other nations, will hold on to, they're going to hold on to the corner of a garment of a Yehudi. Meaning, Everybody's going to have 40 people escorting them, 10 on each side. Nelchai Machem, to say, let's go with you. Why? Kishamanu Elohim Imachem. We heard that God is with you. And I'm stressing it that way. Not God is with you, God is with you. We understand that the true God, the God of the world, the God who created the world, is the God of Israel. Because we see that his people have a country, a monarchy, a state, however it is, that exemplifies the finest in justice and in compassion. And that's what's going to spur them. So essentially, Zechariah's answer to the question of should we keep fasting is you're asking the wrong question. The question is not should we keep fasting. The question is, what do we need to do to ensure that a destruction doesn't happen again? What do we need to do? And that is his long answer. I want to end it with a story which speaks to the issue of Chesed Ve'emet, which is throughout Zechariah is the theme in this section. It's not just Emet, it's not just Tzedek, it's also Chesed. And so how do we put these two together? The truth is that justice sometimes is harsh, and kindness sometimes spills over into, shall we say, being flexible with justice. I heard a great story from Rabbi Muskin years ago. Beautiful story. I think it might have happened in Cleveland. And it's a story I think that we could take to heart because it really sends that message. There was a homeless guy, and the homeless guy was starving, and he broke into a bakery to steal a loaf of bread. And they caught him with the loaf of bread. And he was brought to court, and he was accused of theft. There were witnesses. There was a camera. There was no question that he had stolen the bread. And so the judge pronounced sentence and said, you're guilty of theft, and the fine is $10. All right, you have to pay justice. The judge then took his hat off. So wearing a hat, took his hat off and put it on the table and took $10 out of his pocket and put it into the hat and passed the hat around the courtroom. And by the time the hat got to the homeless guy, there were $500 in it. Tzedek and Chesed. There has to be justice. The guy stole. On the other hand, the guy's homeless. The guy has nothing to eat. So we've got to help him. And that combination is what Zechariah is talking about here. Being able to meld the two together so that it is a compassionate society that looks after everyone there while maintaining a sense of fairness and justice is the vision that we all have to hold. So as we begin or continue our fast, we have to think also about what are the things that we need to do that we have the power to do in our little world and that we need to promote in the larger world and create a better world around us, a world in which the causes for the fasting are fixed. And then next year, Mi'atz Hashem, Tisha B'Av becomes a time of celebration and no longer a time of fasting.